Okay, hello everyone, and very happy Tuesday. Talk about getting lost in time. I'll tell you what, we're in a satsang retreat here, and I really had no idea it was Tuesday until Shauna said something to me about you're teaching at 6:30, right? You know, we're kind of lucky I'm here. We have been, this particular retreat is a type of retreat where people are given optimum opportunity for their own meditation, contemplation, journaling. And for the most part, what I do is I take people to different beautiful places. And I say things like, you've got 3 hours here, or you've got an hour and a half here, or whatever. And then we get together briefly, you know, to kind of discuss what's coming up for people. And we've already had a couple people have some pretty tough things come up. We've also had a lot of really beautiful stuff that's being shared. So we do get together for satsang about twice a day, once in the morning and once in the evening. We're only on our second day of the staying retreat, and it's already fabulous. So we still have 3 more days to go, and I'm pretty excited. Is it okay if I show you guys a present that Jacqueline and Cheryl and Jay and Shauna got me? Come on, let's go look. They bought this for me last Friday, and they gave it to me on Monday at the retreat. See if we can get her in here. Can you guys see her? She's an angel. Can you see her wings behind her? We named her Esmeralda. She has a halo up there. I don't know how well you can see her, but she has a halo. She's got a dove in her hands. Isn't she pretty? So she's hanging here in my bedroom now. And what we're going to do is, once we get a chapel at the retreat house, she's going to move to the chapel. So we'll all be able to enjoy her. But until then, she hangs in my bedroom here in La Vida. Isn't she gorgeous? So thank you to them for the lovely gift, which eventually will be a gift for all of us. So, and it's beautiful here. It's a perfect, 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 perfect week for a satsang retreat. It's funny because last week we had 10 inches of snow. And this week we're like, oh my God, it's gorgeous. It's in the 70s every day and sunshiny and the birds are singing. And today we sat by the river all afternoon, and the river, because of all that melting snow, the river is really full. And it's a wonderful retreat. So with all of that said, we'll begin by asking if anyone else has something they want to share before I begin sharing from what I have collected. All right, then. Let me jump into my collection. And as always, please jump in and talk anytime. I like hearing other people talk. The first thing that I have is to share something from Kathy's journal. So can I share my screen now? Yeah, I can. Woohoo! I'm excited. All right, good. That's exciting. All right, so I'm going to go to Kathy's journal. This is Kathy's journal. And I'm looking at quote number 269. The quote is, "You are looking for satisfaction in the outside world because you think that all these objects you see in front of you are real. They are not." And so Kathy wrote, "Personification of thought in object form keeps us seeking but never long finding satisfaction in the world we behold. Cleverly, we've managed to delude ourselves into believing outward appearances, categorizing all dualistically as preferable or not preferable according to personal taste. But what if we really knew the world was not real, and that the unified field of reality, preference, like the world we believe we perceive, is just a collectively agreed upon place to play until we move on to non-dualism. Now, this is the part of her journal entry that I really wanted to share. She says, Michael Langford talks about closing our eyes when we can in practicing awareness, watching awareness. With eyes closed, that which appears real seems less defined. We can sense the boundaries of the body with eyes closed, or so we think. But if you sneak a peek, you might find the body's not quite aligned with the mind's eye, meaning the mind's eye of the body. Repeatedly during an intensive Vipassana meditation stay, I kept perceiving my nose off center with both eyes to one side of it. Playing with time, elongating or shortening it is another litmus test to play with in exploring the so-called bounds of the objectified world as we think we know it. As is cloud dissipating, which is always fun to try if you think you want a little more sunshine in your day, check it out. What is there to lose but the imaginary world we think is real? If it doesn't check out, then the I know mind remains certain in its worldly quest for satisfaction. So the reason I shared that was because what I see her doing there is playing games, playing with perception to see if it's real or not. And I think that is very, very important. I think playing games is a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. In fact, you may remember in Gentle Healing Year 2, nearly every week I gave you a different game to play, right? So I just wanted to recommend playing games, you know, playing games during meditation. See if your nose, if the way you feel like where your nose is, if that's where it actually is, or is the mind off a little bit. You know, another thing I love to do is I love to notice when my mind reports something with my eyes that isn't true. Like it might report a bear that turns out to be a tree stump, right? Or it might report a dog that turns out to be a statue in a yard, you know. And when I notice my mind reporting these things, and for a little bit you kind of see what the mind's reporting, you know, you start to understand that the mind is literally taking what it knows and projecting it onto, you know, an image. And you know, most of the time it appears somewhat correct, you know, correct as far as this illusion goes, but sometimes it's completely incorrect. But for a moment, you did see a dog, or for a moment, you did see a bear, right? And just in whatever ways that you can play, whatever ways feel genuine and fun with you, for you, just keep playing, you know, in meditation, not in meditation, and just keep noticing that things aren't as real or as solid as they appear to be. I will tell you something that happened to me. Now, this isn't a game you can play, but just weird things can happen. This is something that happened to me when I was in step two, contemplating that the world is not real. I had, I believe it was a dime, just a dime that I, you know, I don't know where I got it from. You know, it wasn't in my change purse. It was somewhere else. And I laid it on this table upstairs, and my intention was later to pick it up and put it in my change purse with my other change. But I laid it on this table upstairs, and I didn't touch it for a couple of days. And I walked by a couple of days later, and I happened to notice the dime was gone. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wonder where the dime went. But I didn't really think anything of it. I mean, it's a dime. I believe it was the next day. I was in the basement downstairs, below where this table is. And I was contemplating that the world is not real, and I had my eyes closed, and I'm really contemplating, and, you know, I don't remember exactly how I was contemplating. I just know that I was contemplating that the world was not real, and I hear this noise. It's not like something fell on the table next to me, and I open my eyes, and there's that dime. You know, it's like it, you know, I don't know where it came from. I mean, I heard it fall. I had my eyes closed. I can't say I saw it fall. But I heard it fall and hit the table. And I opened my eyes, and there's that dime. I thought, that's bizarre. You know, so I just took it as the universe helping me to accept that it wasn't real, because things like that just don't happen in the real universe, right? So when you're contemplating these quotes, you know, be open to playing games, be open to things happening to kind of help you accept that the world is not real, because obviously the two hardest lessons I would say to learn is that the world is not real, and that you, as you perceive yourself, right, the person, are not real. And so we do need assistance, and I'm sure the universe will provide that assistance. But you want to open up with all the willingness that you can in your own contemplation, in your own game playing. any comments on that before I move on? Yes, Tony.
I don't know if this has anything to do with what you're really talking about, but sometimes when I'm sleeping and I'm in a deep sleep and something will wake me up, like an alarm clock that I wasn't expecting or something, and I wake up and I'm totally confused where I'm at, what time it is of the day or the night. I have no sense of my surroundings. It's so weird. And I don't know if that has something to do with the deep sleep that I was just in, and then suddenly I had to wake up to the physical world. But I completely, I've noticed that, like, sometimes I could get a little scared, like, how come I don't know where I'm at? You know? But I just wanted to mention that. It was just, when you were talking about games, it wasn't a game, but it was an experience. So
yeah, it's like you have to recollect the person, because the person didn't exist. You have to recollect the person and recollect their surroundings, and all that collection hasn't happened yet. So,
right. Exactly.
So there's missing pieces. I saw Francine shaking her head, and Lynn says that happened to her too. And you know, I live in two places now. And you know, I live in Pueblo West half the week, and I live in La Vida half the week now. And I've pretty much adjusted to that now. But I will tell you, when I first started living in two places, I really had that experience. I would wake up, and I would not only know, I would not only not know where I was, but I wouldn't know if somebody else was in bed with me or not, and whether I had to be, you know, like, quiet and respectful or not. You know, it was really odd, but I think I've pretty much adjusted now to somehow usually being able to wake up and collect myself pretty quickly. But that is what's happening. You're collecting yourself, right? You're bringing it all back because it didn't exist in the deep sleep. Any other comments? All right, let me see what else I collected then, speaking of collecting. I wanted to look at quotes 271 and 272. says, "What do you know of me when even my talk with you is in your world only?" And then 272 says, the questioner says, "Is your world full of things and people as is mine?" And Nisargadatta Maharaj says, "No, it is full of myself." And I think the main reason I wanted to pull up these two particulars, you know, Nisargadatta talks about the talk is in your world only, and then also that his world is not full of things and people. You know, those are difficult quotes to grasp with the mind. Maybe difficult isn't even fair. Impossible quotes to grasp with the mind. But I think after the reading I did last week, it's funny. It was actually funny when I was reading Bernadette Roberts to y'all, because my perception was you all were sitting there listening to me like this. Is that how you felt? But I think that reading brought something else to reading these types of quotes. Because what I perceive in some of your contemplations is it seems like there's a little bit of a shift. I don't know exactly what to call that shift. Maybe an acceptance that there really is an awakening beyond this world. You know, after listening to that, to Bernadette sharing her experience, again, it was shared as a direct experience. It just seems like there's a little more depth to your contemplations of quotes like that one. I don't know. Why don't you guys tell me? Why don't you tell me how you felt when I read Bernadette Roberts, how you're feeling now a week later? I'd love to hear from you. Okay, Shauna.
I'm excited. I mean, I can't understand it in any way mentally, but my heart recognizes that something's really honest and true about what she did. And I'm just amazed at how she can put it into words. So I'm looking forward to this adventure together. Thank you.
Does anyone else want to share? Did that reading at all affect, Kathy says she listened to it twice and she's also looking forward to more. Did that reading affect your reading of the quotes and your contemplation of the quotes? Did you see the quotes differently after hearing from Bernadette than before? No comments, huh? All right, well then we'll just keep going and we'll see what happens. It certainly seemed like you all were writing in a different way. It seemed like it may have affected, like there was, again, a bit more acceptance of the teaching that the world is not real, that the world does not exist, that sages do not see this world at all. But I guess we'll see what happens as we move forward. Today, during the retreat, this afternoon, what we did was we sat by the river, and I was doing my seven steps contemplations while we were sitting by the river. And I came to a quote by Ms. Argadatta. Let me see if I can find it. Oh yeah, quote number 986. He says, "Do not be afraid of freedom from desire and fear. It enables you to live a life so different from all you know, so much more intense and interesting that truly, by losing all, you gain all." Let me read that one more time to you. Do not be afraid of freedom from desire and fear. It enables you to live a life so different from all you know, so much more intense and interesting that truly, by losing all, you gain all. So you can hear he's really saying the exact same thing that Bernadette Roberts was trying to tell us through her description. And in fact, when I was contemplating this today, what I did was I tried to imagine the most intense and interesting experience that I could imagine. And for me, it was being up in the mountains on a beautiful, clear day, with wildflowers all around me, with animals nearby that are kind of curious about me, with, you know, butterflies and other insects flying around, with mountain views as far as I could see, and with that deep devotional feeling in my heart that I get when I'm contemplating, and also that I could stay there as long as I wanted, that I didn't have to leave. I mean, that was just the most intense an interesting experience that I could imagine. That would be like paradise on earth for Regina. And then I sat there and just kind of accepted into my being that Nisargadatta or Bernadette Roberts would tell me it's much, much more grand than that. You know, take your most intense and your most interesting experience. And remember, she said it pales compared to the absolute, to the truth, you know. So I really spent some time contemplating that today. And, you know, we can't imagine what they're talking about, but they are witnesses, you know, and especially, I mean, as we go into Bernadette Roberts' book more carefully, you know, you're going to see what an incredible witness she is. You know, I don't think anybody else has ever told the story the way she tells the story. Nisargadatta talks about the fact that his world isn't peopled, you know, and doesn't have things in it. And Ramana Maharshi talks about all you see is the self. And Michael Langford talks about, you know, there, you know, he sees no world, he sees no stars, he sees no universe. But Bernadette Roberts describes it in a way, you know, going through the process, and then arrives and totally agrees with what Nisargadatta says here, that it is so much more intense and interesting than everything that you know, right? So, you know, again, all we can do is go for it. We can't imagine it. But it is very, very nice to have these witnesses. Kathy says that was her favorite part, her sharing of how absolutely grand beyond what can be known. And yeah, it's interesting because when I first read Bernadette Roberts, Kathy, and everybody else, my thought was, I will never share this book in the sanctuary. And the reason is she describes everything she went through, not just the grand ending. And I was afraid that it would scare people. But I think that I think we're ready. And so we'll go through and we'll hear everything she went through. And she did get to the grand ending. And Hal says, which book is that? There'll be two books I'll actually go back and forth between by Bernadette Roberts. One is called What is the Self? And the other one is called The Experience of No Self. Lynn says, maybe I should not read it then. I would recommend probably not reading it by yourself. Yeah, I would recommend going through it with me, with my teaching. We'll do it together. I think that's the best way to do it. We'll go through it together. We can discuss it together. Yes, Jay.
Yeah, I am. I went ahead and started reading Experience of the No Self, and now I'm rethinking that. But I think I'm only on chapter 5, so if I would only read to chapter 5, I would definitely want to give the path up completely.
Yes, I agree.
So I'm really hoping it gets better after chapter 5. Okay, giving up the mic.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there are parts you're like, holy crap, I don't want that. But I will also tell you, Jay, I did not read one book by itself. I actually read the two books together. That's how I read them, and that's how I'll go through them. And there's something a little more enlightening about reading both books at the same time. And I can't even tell you how I did it. It was very spontaneous, and I'm sure we'll be spontaneously led through again. It wasn't like a chapter and a chapter or anything nearly that organized. But the two books reflected on each other in a way that was, I think, a lot more helpful. But there are some scary parts in that book. And if I did not say that, I'd just be lying to you. And so, and again, we have never, ever, ever heard of a master that did not say that there was fear in letting go of the self, right? So, you know, some people say, oh, no, that's scary. I want to quit. What I say is, thank you for telling me. Because then when I experience it, I'll know it's normal, I'll know it's natural, and it's, you know, I think it will help me through it, right? You know, so, yeah, Jay says very scary because she illustrates it very well. Yeah, she doesn't hide any of the details. And again, her path, by the way, I do want to say her experience was her experience, although everybody experiences, you know, letting go of certain things and fear and resistance. Every path is completely unique. So I don't think we should expect to experience exactly what she experienced. I think we would be completely wrong in that. I would call it one woman's story of awakening. And ours will be different. I think each and every one is different. I don't think any two are the same. But to know that there are these intense phases and that a part of what we have to do is rest, accept, and trust through the intense phases, whatever they look like for us, is very important. I mean, I have already gone through some intense phases. And if I was afraid of intensity, I wouldn't be here, right? And so, you know, I don't know what's yet to come, but intense phases are typically not what they appear to be. And what I mean is the mind may be all freaked out about how unsafe you are and how you're going to die and then everything else that it says, when actually all that's happening is you're sitting in a recliner in your living room. You know? And this is a part of what we have to pay attention to. We have to pay attention to that what's happening is the worst part of our imagination is being activated to try and call us back to believing it. But the key is the worst part of our imagination is being activated. Right? You saying something, Shauna? Are you just talking to Jay? All right. Let's go ahead and move on. I did have something I wanted to share from Lynn's journal, Lynn Castaldo. She said, here's an insight I received in March of 2018. Oh, I love this insight, especially right after what we just discussed. She said, a mustard seed has no idea what it will become, yet it allows itself to grow. Do not doubt what you will become, but give your trust to me. Stay focused in your heart. So this was some inner wisdom that she received in March of 2018. But I love contemplating that a mustard seed has no idea what it will become, yet it allows itself to grow, right? In fact, Teresa wrote something in her journal very similar. She wrote, the story of the caterpillar, which became an amazing creature called a butterfly. Now listen to this part. If the caterpillar had a human mind, it would never consent to become a chrysalis and let its whole body change into a jellied mass. The caterpillar responds to its deepest instinct and transformation occurs. But I love that. If the caterpillar had a human mind, right? It would never allow itself to go through that transformation to become a butterfly. And in fact, when we're looking at Bernadette Roberts' book, I mean, in effect, this is what Bernadette Roberts is describing, is her experience of transforming from the human to the absolute, right? You know, just like the caterpillar transforms, right, into this jelly mass before it becomes the butterfly. You know, the butterfly might be the grand result, but the jelly mass part, maybe that part we would judge as not so cool, right? And so some of what happens in the transformation, it isn't exactly what our mind favors. But you never get to the butterfly. You never get to the grand ending. You never get to the climax. Without going through the entire process. So I just really appreciated Lynn sharing about the mustard seed doesn't know what it will become, and Teresa sharing about how if the caterpillar had a human mind, it would never consent. And I think these are good things for us to contemplate again as we step forward. As we step forward on a path that most people choose not to walk. Right? I mean, let's just be honest about this. Even most spiritual people. Most spiritual people enjoy being spiritual people. There's a big difference between enjoying being a spiritual person and having a true aspiration to awaken. Right? All right, let's look at 277. Actually, let me have a drink first. I'm a little thirsty from all my talking. Within the prison of your world appears a man who tells you that the world of painful contradictions, which you have created, is neither continuous nor permanent, and is based on a misapprehension. He pleads with you to get out of it by the same way by which you got into it. You got into it by forgetting what you are And you will get out of it by knowing yourself as you are. So I found that to be a really interesting quote on a number of different levels. I'm not even sure where to start talking about it. I think maybe I'll start with the painful contradictions. Right now in Gentle Healing 1, they are going through the part of Gentle Healing where I introduced you all to some videos, one of which was called Happy Birthday Jesus, sung by Kirtana. And in that video, you're looking at all kinds of scenes of violence in the world. The other one was by John Lennon. It's Happy Christmas. But he's asking you, you know, what have you done? And again, it's showing scenes of war. His particularly is focused on war in the world. It is so easy for some of us who really live a charmed life to forget what this world really is. And I am absolutely convinced that if we allow ourselves to forget what this world really is, it's kind of like lulling ourselves to stay asleep. You know, because our lives are so easy, most of us, maybe not all of us, but most of us, our lives are so, I mean, my God, if you guys could see where I'm at right now. I mean, La Vida is so beautiful. And I've got a river running by right outside, the windows open, I can hear the river. I'm sitting here looking at this beautiful mountain. It's so peaceful here, it's so quiet here. And yet all over the world, Michael Langford says, you know, a billion people are committing violence against other people today, you know, some type of violence. And listen to what this quote says. Within the prison of your world appears a man who tells you that the world of painful contradictions, which you have created. I think it's incredibly important for us to accept without guilt that tolerance of the ego mind is also tolerance of violence. Right? Tolerance of the ego mind is also tolerance of violence. Because again, we have these easier lives, most of us. And our minds, in our humble opinion, I mean, they may drive us crazy, kind of, but we don't perceive ourselves as the evil one. You know, we tolerate our minds, right? It kind of reminds me of the Course when Jesus said, "You are far too tolerant of mind wandering." Do you remember that line? When we tolerate the ego right here in our own minds, we tolerate all of that violence in the world. And it's important for us to contemplate that without guilt, because that can help motivate us out of our somewhat soft and easy lives into spiritual practice. Now, the interesting thing is most of us, I don't know if it's true for all of us, but most of us, again, have, you know, if you took all of the lives, all the lives on the planet, and line them up from the worst experience to the best experience, most of us are actually up there hugging the best experience. Right? That's where we're at. You know, in our comfy houses with plenty of money in the bank and, you know, everything that we've got. I tell my computer I want to do it later. Remind me tomorrow. It wants to install right now. However, there's an advantage to being the most comfy people in the world in that we have the time and opportunity to do the spiritual practice. You know, if you're being beaten every day by your husband, you're too afraid for your life, maybe, to be involved with spiritual practice. You're too crazy trying to figure out just how you're going to survive. You know, if you're starving, you're weak. Your brain probably isn't strong enough for spiritual practice, and you're too concerned about where your food is going to come from. If you live in some war-torn section of the world and there's bombings going around, going off around you all the time, and you've got a family, you know, you're too consumed with that. You know, these people who are in these situations are rarely, if ever. I personally don't know of one, but maybe there has been some I don't know of. So I'll just say are rarely the ones that awaken, because they are too consumed with the day-to-day problems. We're the ones that are in the position that have the opportunity to awaken, but we need to be motivated out of compassion for them. Right? We need to understand that our awakening, it's not so I can become enlightened. It's not about me becoming enlightened. It's about this world that needs help. And we're the ones that have the time and the opportunity to provide that help by taking some of the ego mind out of the creation of the world. But again, you know, because our lives are easier, the motivation isn't necessarily there unless we really look and contemplate some of the pain in the world. Like, that's what motivated Buddha, remember? The suffering in the world, right? And even Jesus said, my life is a ransom for many, right? So quote 277 says, within the prison of your world appears a man who tells you that the world of painful contradictions which you have created is neither continuous nor permanent and is based on a misapprehension. He pleads with you to get out of it, right? He pleads with you to get out of it. Because again, our waking up from the world is the only way to resolve the issues of the world. Recently, we watched the movie Gandhi, and only a few people really showed up for the discussion, so I'll tell you what happened in the discussion. You know, so many people are so impressed with Gandhi, and don't get me wrong, I'm impressed with Gandhi too. If you didn't watch the movie, I still recommend watching it. Gandhi, you know, the ability to become as humble and as meek and as sincere as he was is a genuine accomplishment in this world. You know, most people never touch the level of meekness and sincerity that he touched. But what I see as the mistake in that lifetime is Gandhi still thought that he could solve some of the world's problems. Gandhi really thought that by leading a peaceful movement, he could remove the British rule of India. He could bring the different religious parts of India, the Muslim, the Hindu, the Sikh, all together. And they would work together in a government to begin to resolve India's problems. Poverty was the number one problem that he spoke of. And that's just not what happened. I mean, the British left. And then the Muslims and the Hindus began to kill each other. And in fact, India even split into two nations, Pakistan and India, with Pakistan being the primary Muslim section and India being the primary Hindu section. And when Gandhi died, just before his death, he was sad. And he was sad because he believed he failed. And what I told them in the discussion group is he did fail. He failed because what he attempted to do cannot be done. He attempted to resolve the world's problems, sure, through peace, right? Sure. I mean, you know, he went about it in the way that smells the most like spirituality, except true spirituality is leaving the world. Within the prison of your world appears a man who tells you that the world of painful contradictions, which you have created, is neither continuous nor permanent and is based on a misapprehension. He pleads with you to get out of it. Right? By the same way which you got into it by forgetting what you are, and you will get out of it by knowing yourself as you are. Remembering yourself is waking up from the world. So does anybody have any comments or questions or anything they want to share based on quote 277? I guess what I'm hearing in my head, so I'll share it, is this is very serious business. Yeah, this waking up thing. It's very serious business. And I think the further we go, the more we realize that. Yeah, I guess that's all I'll say right now about that. But maybe if you listen to my weekly gathering on a Sunday, you heard that. You heard that some refinements are happening with me right now, right? Some additional adjustments, additional refinements. All right, let's see what else I have here. I have number 282. So let's look at 282. Your mistake lies in your belief that you are born. You were never born. Nor will you ever die. But you believe that you were born at a certain date and place, and that a particular body is your own. And probably none of us can deny that, right? We somewhat believe that we were born in a certain date and place, and that a particular body is our, like, this is my body, right? It's not yours, it's mine. So what I have here is go look at the RDA journal. So let me share again and we'll go look at that journal. All right, this is what I contemplated when I was contemplating this quote. Do I know for a fact that I was born, or is that an assumption? My mother told me I was born. She says she knows because she was there. And probably most of you who give birth feel like you know the birth of your child too. However, does she really know that this birth was my beginning? Or does she only believe birth was my beginning? Is the idea that I was born a fact or an assumption? And if you think about your own, you know, those of you who are mothers especially, and you gave birth, if you think about your own, I can't see you because I'm sharing my screen. I wanted to look in your eyeballs, but I can't. If you think about your own giving of birth, which is an experience I've never had because I had adopted. So if you think about your own experience of giving birth, what I ask you to look at now, as you're remembering that experience, is do you know for a fact that 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 was the beginning of your child's life, or is that an assumption? I'd like somebody to answer me. Okay, go ahead, Tony.
Well, as you were asking the question, I was really sitting with that. I have two children, or two adult children, and specifically my son, I can remember that birth, and I remember him crying when he was born, so I know that he was alive. But what about before he actually was delivered out of my body? There was life inside as well. And then if I take it back to the fetus growing inside of you, there was something that was already alive before, even as the you get down to the union of the egg and the sperm, there's life there. And if I mean, you could just take it back and take it back and take it back, and I don't even know how far back it would go.
I absolutely agree. That's where I went in my contemplation, right there too. Like you can't define where a life began, can you? So if we really look at this, I mean, again, I believed I was born because my mother told me I was born. She said she was there, right? But that's really an assumption. When you look at it, even if you gave birth, you know, and that baby popped out of your body, that's still an assumption that that's the beginning. The second paragraph says, we see a lifeless body and we say there is death. But is death a fact or is it an assumption? Have I ever had a direct experience of death, or is life being my only direct experience? Isn't the idea of death based on an outside perception? Isn't the one seeing this perception and interpreting it as death current life being? So think about any death that you've experienced. It could be the death of a person, the death of a pet. It could be roadkill on the side of the road. It really doesn't matter. Think about any death that you have ever experience and you perceived that as dead. Do you know that for a fact, or is that an assumption?
Can I share?
Yes, please do.
Would you? Yeah. I have a interest, kind of like your daughter Jasmine, in like molecular biology and stuff like that, just as a sort of interesting thing to me. And looking and studying the complex, like what I'd call molecular machines that make up our ability to move a muscle, or like Tony talked about when the sperm and the egg unite, it's actually just a really complex molecular process. So complex that it forms a body that, when you combine on top of that thoughts and a mind, right? We call that life. But that's what I see you talking about here is, you know, do we really know that? We're trained to see the physical body as life, but when you really look at the tiny little details of it, it's just a bunch of molecular little machines working incredibly complex, but nonetheless, a physical machine. On top of that, we put our thoughts and we call that life. So apart from our thoughts and the meaning we assign to it, life has no meaning. None of this has any meaning. And then we put our meaning on top of it. So I think it's a two-part system where we got the molecules and all the complex systems that exist. And then on top of that, we've got our thoughts. So I'm seeing the two things coming together as giving the appearance of what we call our life. What I see us doing with our non-dual practice is starting to pull off the table the mental part and accepting truth, which is behind all of that. It's behind both our thoughts and it's behind these molecular machines that we call life. it's behind both of those things, and it's actually true divinity. That is God. That's sacredness. We're trying to put this sacred divinity on our thoughts and on these molecular machines and call that, what God created. God created life in his likeness and image and blah, blah, blah. But I'm starting to realize that might not really be true. And these are such, horribly unpopular ideas. I don't know where else I could ever say something like this. It's kind of frightening a bit to even think like this and go down these tracks, as Bernadette, if you really read the book, it's frightening, right? To pull the rug out from underneath your whole, everything you think is true, right? And yet something draws me to it. I think I'm, willing to start to go down the track more, and that's really what I wanted to share from about 5 minutes ago is, you talked about it being a very serious matter, awakening. And I like to joke around, and, I'm just realizing that, the more I step down this path and the more committed I become bit by bit, there's less and less wiggle room that I feel. I don't know how else to describe it other than that. And it's not a repression or a force of any kind. It's a narrowing of my desires and focus. So that's just what I wanted to share. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. Can anybody talk about whether you've ever had a direct experience of death before, or whether death is an assumption? When you really look, what's the truth?
Regina?
Yes.
So I have. First, I'd like to say, speak on what Tony stated about experiencing life growing inside of you. I've had two children, and I've had the experience of life growing inside of you. And I actually think life begins even before conception, because the sperm actually is alive and it has a goal. So
it does,
it has a goal. So I think it even begins before that. But I also had an experience of watching someone die, which was, a little on the gruesome side, because you're watching this body die, and the body's pretty much decaying. And, it was a little strange because they say the physical body starts to die when your brainstem starts to die. And, this was my stepmother. She had been sick for a while, and she was dying, and her brainstem was dying, and she, you couldn't communicate with her any longer. But when the minister came in to read her last rites, and she told her, if you see the light or if you see Jesus, walk towards the light. And when she said that, her body raised up off the bed like, no, I'm not ready to go. And we're all looking like, what the heck? We thought she was dead. And so, and then after they removed all the life support, we were waiting for them to pronounce her dead, and we were just sitting around talking, and she died, and we didn't even know she was dead. So it was very strange. I don't know what I was expecting to happen, whether we were supposed to see a spirit rise up and out of the body, or something. But one minute she was there, and then next minute, it was just her body there. It was just like an empty shell, and there was no life in it. So it was, it was just a strange experience. And I had always wondered what happened to someone at the moment of death. But, you know, it's just something that I don't want to experience again, because it just left me wondering, well, now what, you know?
Well, and that's a good wondering, actually. So can you say, based on that experience, that you know for a fact there's death? Or would it be more true to say you know for a fact something changed?
If something changed, I don't know if, I don't think she died. I just think that she left that body and just moved on somewhere else. I'm not exactly sure where she went to, but she wasn't there anymore. It was like a light went out inside that body, and she just moved on from to somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think that's where this contemplation is getting to, is that, you know, we have assumptions, big assumptions, about the beginning of life and the end of life. And we never really contemplate, do we actually know that what we're assuming is true? I think it's much more fair to say the beginning of life and the end of life is a mystery.
Right.
Than to say, I know birth happened here on this date and I know death happened here on this date.
I agree.
You know?
Yep,
the truth is, we don't know. And that's where, and so again, if we look at the quote, your mistake lies in your belief that you were born. You were never born and you will never die. You know, maybe he's telling the truth. Right? That's really what we want to open up to, you know, in a very deep way. I mean, when we contemplate these quotes, we want to contemplate them as deeply as we can, so that we feel something genuine inside of us, you know, shift. Like if a moment ago you believed your children were born on a certain date and time, and then after a contemplation, you're like, you know, I mean, I understand that that particular body, that name that I gave it, was born at that particular, but my child is really this life, and I have no idea when that life began, right? You've made a shift. That's a shift. In fact, I'll just go ahead and read the rest of this. If I look only from my actual direct experience, not based on what I learned or interpreted, do I know anything other than always here, life being? Do I know from my direct experience, life beginning? Does anybody remember your life beginning? Do you have a direct remembrance of the beginning of life? Do I know from my direct experience life ending? Or are life beginning and life ending ideas learned, interpreted, and assumed? Right? It's just a contemplation. But to me, these types of contemplations are very important. It's more important to contemplate in this way, even though we may not actually come to an answer. It's more of an undoing of our previous assumptions than it is an answer, right? But these kinds of contemplations are very important, much more important than just believing, you know, taking another mental concept of there is no birth and there is no death, you know, like it's just at the head level. It's much better to get into the, you know what, actually, when I look at it, I don't know. I mean, I can't say I know. I used to think I know, but now I don't. That's a much better end of a contemplation, if it's genuine. And to take some deep, real looking.
Can I say a thought real quick?
Yes, go ahead.
What I can say with absolute certainty with my own direct experience is that I know that when thought began, for me, because I did go through that rebirthing process and I actually had a memory of being born and it came back to me going through the canal, looking up at the ceiling. And my mind had absolutely no thoughts in it at all.
it was completely blank. So I do have a memory of when what I think of as this mind or self started out, and it was completely empty. Didn't know about a self, didn't know about anything. Or any concept of what I thought life was or any of that. So for certainty, I can say that that's where this conscious mind began, and it was without thought. And that was a memory. I went through the memory of it. It was a very weird memory because there was no thought, but I had the memory. It came back.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
The last thing that I want to share is that our movie discussion group movie this month is called Dark City, which I have not yet seen, and I even looked at my calendar today to see when I could see it. And to be honest, I'm not 100% certain I'll be able to, because I'm on retreat this week and family vacation next week, and then it's movie discussion group. So we'll see what happens. But today, one of the journals I read was Manuela's journal, her contemplation of these particular quotes. And in 4 or 5 of the contemplations, she referred to Dark City. And so even though I have not seen it myself, what I could tell by Manuela's journal is that there are themes in Dark City that are completely relevant to the quotes that we are contemplating right now. Even though I personally may not be able to watch it because of my schedule, I want to encourage you all to watch it and maybe join Jay for movie discussion group and I can come and listen. Yeah. Malcolm says it's an excellent, relevant movie. So I just wanted to let you know it does look that way from reading Manuela's journal. So please consider watching the movie Dark City. Let me look at my calendar real quick so I can tell you exactly when movie discussion group is. And I will be there to at least listen to you guys, even if I may not be able to watch the movie and discuss it myself. I can come and learn through your watching it. Movie discussion group is on Sunday, May 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 5 p.m. Pacific and 6 Mountain for you, Jay. So please consider watching Dark City. And as you contemplate, now Jay did create a play sheet, which you can find under Audios and Videos, Sanctuary Highlights, and in the movie discussion page. But also, I don't know what his play sheet looks like. I haven't looked at it. But also watch Dark City and see how it's relevant to the quotes that we're contemplating right now. Because Manuela did a really good job of connecting the two. So that's it. That's my last comment for the day, except I have one more comment. I am on family vacation next week, which means I won't be here to lead Gentle Healing next week. So I have asked Shauna to lead next week. Wave to Mashana so they know who you are. Yeah, or do this. however, Shauna hasn't led movie discussion group, and if she's at all normal, she might be a little nervous about it. Who knows? Maybe she's not normal. So what I'm asking you all to do is help out. You know how I usually collect things, and I come here fully prepared. I'm sure Shauna will do her best to do the same. But why don't you all take it upon yourselves to be a little more involved next week and bringing something to discussion to make it a little easier on Shauna? How's that sound? Okay? And then I will see you all back for Gentle Healing in 2 weeks. Okay? Bye.